been tasked with doing the Sunday school for the month of December, and so I decided to kind of talk about some things that I didn't have time to get to over the summer when I did the little session, and that seems so long ago, I hardly remember what we talked about. I know what we talked about. We talked about safetyism and all that stuff, but I wanted to talk about social media. My intent was to do that back in the summer, and so I've called this series Social Media: Convenient Connectivity at a Cost. In some cases, I should maybe put an asterisk there, in some cases. And I want to say from the beginning, I'm not against technology at all. I actually love technology. I like having laptops and iPhones and, you know, Apple Watches. So if you have an Android, I'm sorry, but y'all can laugh, it's okay. But I do enjoy technology quite a bit. Technology, really, simply defined, is the application of science. Whatever science comes up with at the current time is technology. And you may think, well, I'm against technology. Well, you have a car, don't you? Then you're for technology. We use technology all the time. And it's not just the electronics that we think of. I know that's kind of the cultural definition of what we use, but everything that comes from the field of science that's applied that we use is technology. I mean, whether it's your blender sitting on your countertop or your KitchenAid mixer, or I'm sure you used all that stuff on Thursday, you men, we were in there cooking and doing a great job, weren't we, Grover? We use the technology of that oven and stuck it in there and all those kind of things we use on a daily basis. That's what technology is. And I've heard some people, you know, trash technology, that it's bad, blah, blah, blah. And I just don't go there. I think it's a good tool that God's given us. He has allowed men to understand more about His creation. Now, that's what you got to understand. Technology comes from what God created, the laws that He has in this physical universe. And man has been privileged by God's blessing to understand some of those things and to learn some of those things and then to apply them in a way that we get to benefit from them. I don't know how men today, they're doing it not to give God the glory. They're doing it for the convenience of themselves. And I know that that's where they're coming from, how to make things better and all that. But as Christians, we look and see, well, look what God allowed us to discover over the past 100 years even, just such a quick and rapid rise in technology. I've heard people preach about from, you know, Uzziah the king, I think it was, that he used the technology of the chariots and all these weapons and things, and that's why God judged him and all those things. And I'm thinking, well, I think God judged him because he was disobedient. I think that's why God judged him, not because he used the newest chariot that was out there, a weapon of war. You know, God gives us things to use, and we need to use them for His glory and honor. So I am not against technology whatsoever. I'm not against social media. I'm not against social media. I use it. I don't like watching the news. I know you know that about me. It just makes me too upset. But I have things that I follow on Instagram or Facebook that give me news stories, so I can just read about it instead of hearing what some liberal commentator is spouting out of the TV. So that's how I keep up with things. I don't have, you know, I remember the old days, my dad, we're going to get home in time. I've got to watch the news tonight. And we were always like, Dad's going to watch the news. And you get to listen to Dan Blather, as I call him. Used to run, I guess, was it CBS? I don't know what network he was on. And we just couldn't stand listening to him. But Dad would always sit there, 6:30, we got to watch the news. Well, you don't have to do that these days, right? You don't have to. You can literally take your, and I left my phone over there, you can take your little iPhone or whatever, and you can watch whatever you want anytime you want it. You don't have to, oh, here's this schedule. You can record even what you want and watch it later and fast forward the commercials. That's a nice little feature, by the way. I really enjoy fast forwarding commercials. I can record the football game and say, don't tell me about it. I know the Panthers got slaughtered again and choked on last second field goals like they did last week. That's okay. I want to see the agony and pain for myself and fast forward through the commercials. A lot of fun to do that. But I like social media. I'm not against it. I like technology. I'm not against technology whatsoever. And I think we need to use it as God's given it to us for His glory. We have technology in the classroom. Oh, what are we going to do? I mean, we got projectors and whiteboards and all these things, and the kids can follow along with PowerPoints and videos. And I like watching Mrs. Brainerd teach. She likes to use a lot of those different things. She has a little Kahoot game that she uses a lot, and the kids get out the tablets, and it's a review game, and they have to match the answer with a certain shape, and whoever can do it the fastest wins. So Samuel's always fighting with Seth in there to see who can get the most points. But, you know, it's fun, and it teaches them, and they're reviewing right there for the test and quiz, a variety of things you could do. We have Chromebooks here at school where the students can, just like college, they type their assignment out, they get the assignment online, they answer the assignment, write the paper, submit it online, teacher grades it online, submits it back to them, don't even have to print it out. It's good. It saves paper. It saves a lot of things. And then they get used to how Canvas operates in college. It's good for them. And I'm for technology and I like social media. I use it. But obviously there's some things that have caused a change in our culture today. There's some things that are negative in it. And I do say there's things that are negative in everything. We just have to use it the right way. I'm not for just chunking stuff out. Well, there's bad stuff on the TV, so I'm going to chunk the TV out. Well, and there's people that do that. That's fine. That's no problem. But there's things that are good and beneficial on TV as well. There are, you know, okay, the car can be used for evil, right? I can use my car, the Ranger, because it's fast. I can get in the Ranger and I can go down and I can rob a bank. And I can use that Ranger because it's so speedy as my getaway vehicle. And the clutch will go out 5 miles down the road and then we're done. And the speedometer doesn't work and the air conditioner doesn't work. So I'll sweat to death and die of a heat stroke while I'm running from the cops. But, you know, you're driving through there. Now, I'm using the Ranger for evil. We can use anything we want for evil, if you think about it. Because that's our heart. Our sinful heart can take whatever God has and use it for evil. And our heart in Christ can take the opportunities Christ has given us and use them for His glory. And that's, our school has a Facebook page. Our school has an Instagram page, and Caitlin is running around taking pictures of things and sending out announcements and letting parents know what's going on. That's good. You can even take you don't even have to video camera things and send out CDs anymore. You can literally take your iPhone and Facebook Live any program going on, and then parents can go on and watch it years later if they want to. And it's all there. Those are good things. Announcements and all kinds of things. You can use them for good. But there are things that have come from social media and from technology that, of course, we have to be careful with. We have to be cautious with. The problem I have today is that parents just let their kids have these things at a young age with zero supervision. And sadly, most of the parents don't even know what is on, what their kids are on. They have no idea. The things that they're getting into, the things they're sending, they don't understand how it works. They just give up. Well, whatever. You know, that's fine. And we're going to get into some of those kind of things. Some of the stuff we're going to talk about came from this book, and I recommend it very, it's a research study. And there's some things in here that obviously we don't agree with and some things that are inappropriate based on what teenagers have said. But I just wanted to share the title with you because this sums it up. We're going to look at some of these things, pick and choose some things. It says, iGeneration. We talked about iGen. We're going to talk about them again today. Why today's super connected kids? They're super connected, aren't they? They've got the world at their fingertips. All the social media outlets, all the news, anything they want, they're connected to everybody. This person's got to like me, and I'm friends with this person, and I'm connected to that, and I follow this, and my Twitter follows this, and I'm LinkedIn with this, and Instagram this, and so on and so forth. They're super connected, but they're growing up less rebellious. Now, you think that sounds weird. In other words, they're a bunch of softies. Now, don't think of the word rebellious in the way that we do. This person, she's done studies in generational things for 20 to 30 years, and she's seen the change. That, in other words, these kids don't know how to stand up for anything. They're just, whatever. That's the way they are. Less rebellious. I mean, you'd want to have a little bit of backbone to do something, right? Get fired up about something, it would seem. They don't want to go out on their own. They don't want to be independent. So they're less rebellious. They're more tolerant. More tolerant. We don't want to offend anybody because I'm connected to everybody. And it might hurt their feelings. Less happy. And completely unprepared for adulthood. And then she has an asterisk. And what that means for the rest of us. The next generation, when they get into places of leadership, it's going to be scary. I'm just going to say that. And I know we've said that about almost every generation, but it seems to get worse and worse. We're going to get into some of those generational things here in a little bit. But, you know, social media. Let's talk about a few things here. We're going to discuss kind of the evolution of it, the history of where social media came from. We're going to look at some statistics today. We're going to look at statistics and all those things. And then next couple times, we're going to get into some specific things in social media that can be used for good and some things that are being used for evil. And I think as parents, we need to be aware of these things. Even as grandparents, we need to know where to look and what to check. And I've had to actually literally take my phone before and show parents. You see this little thing up here? You can click on that. Oh, it opens up. Your son has 4 different Instagram profiles.
Did you know that? Oh, look at this one. It's got a very bad name. You really want your son's page being called that? And they're in shock because they don't know how to use anything. We need to be aware of this, and we need to understand that this is a way that young people are not thinking about the Lord. This is a way that, you know, we think about Psalm chapter 1, you know, blessed is the man that standeth not in the counsel of the ungodly, walketh the way of sinners, and all those things. How are they doing it now? They're doing it through social media. That's how they're getting that counsel and standing in the way of sinners and sitting in the seat of the scornful. They're doing it not with each other because we're all got our face in a screen. So we're all sitting independently in little parts of the world, but we're still doing evil because that's our heart. Those are the things we got to be very, very careful of. I thought about Daniel chapter 12 as well, verse 4. This verse is used a lot. It says, "Thou, O Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book, even to the time of the end." The time of the end. "Many will run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." Now, I know that's used in the context of the book of Daniel, that the book of Daniel is going to be unfolded later on when knowledge increases. But the fact still remains that in the end time, knowledge is going to increase. And I think today we know more. It's at our fingertips. All the things we can look up. I hate to say it, but encyclopedias are outdated. Now, there's a pro and a con to that. There's a pro and a con to that. The bad part is kids don't know how to look anything up. Kids don't know how to read as well. Kids don't go through the pain of... I know, it was a pain. Teacher, well, you go look it up yourself. Go into the library, pull out the big dictionary, you know, or how many of you, your parents ever said, go look it up in the dictionary? My mom said that a million times, and boy, did she have a dictionary, a big one that was complicated. And here I am, a little 10-year-old, flipping through, trying to figure out how to use it, but I figured it out. There's some good things to doing that. The convenience is a good thing, but also it has, again, faults. So the convenience of, I can just Google. But there's problems with that, too. You can't believe everything you read on the internet. I'm in shock. We're going to look at why that's true in just a minute. Why that's true. I wrote down a few jokes as well. When I was a kid, my social network was called Outside. Right, that was our social network. We were outside, and I know times change very rapidly. We talked about that in our summer sessions as well. What did the general do? What did the general do when he learned via Twitter that the battle wasn't going well? He retweeted. Retreat, retweet. Come on. That's a good one, Ryan. Now, you're going to like this one, Ryan. I'm glad you're here. Chuck Norris doesn't need Twitter. He's already following you. Ryan and I have been saying Chuck Norris jokes since he was in high school, so I'm glad Ryan was there for that. Anyway, enough with the jokes. Let's talk about where social media even came from. And to do that, we got to go way back to the beginning of really the internet. And that's called, and we've referred to this before, Web 1.0. Web 1.0 began back in about 1989. Of course, there were things going on way before that, even back into the 60s, where people were able to communicate via computers when they first were coming out in the 60s and 70s, and they were doing little messages here and there. And there's a lot more details you can go to. We're just looking at the basic one. 1989. Tim Berners-Lee was the man's name who really came up with the idea of maybe there should be some kind of worldwide web of information, just data that's out there that people can access. And Web 1.0, link and access information of various kinds as a web of nodes in which the user can browse at will. The user's looking for information. And here's the key to 1.0. It's read-only. Right? The original internet. And I've told you the funny stories before. It's read-only with no interaction. When I was a kid, I talked about this. My dad, in 1995, we went down to People's Computers in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we bought our first computer. You know, the one with a monitor like this big, you know, huge, and the big tower down there, and all these cables running everywhere. And man, we thought it was the most awesome, coolest thing in the world. We didn't have a clue what the thing was even for. We just thought it was cool. Look at this. Windows 3.1. Phew. I mean, that was where it was at. That was the real deal. And so we turned the computer on. We got all the keyboards set up, and we sat there and stared at the screen. Man, this is awesome. What is it? No idea. What do we do with it? No idea. And then Dad bought a couple programs where we could, he used it mainly for his business. He bought Quicken way back in the day when Quicken first came out. And that's why he bought the computer, so he could run his business through an accounting software. And then he bought us a WordPerfect type thing. Microsoft Word wasn't as popular back then. I know that's hard to believe, but WordPerfect, I still have a laptop that has WordPerfect on it. Because I have about 300 documents that were written in WordPerfect that I can't access unless I use that laptop. So I'm hoping it won't die on me, but it's an ancient brick. But that's the way some of those, maybe it'll turn into a Frisbee one day, I'm not sure. But he bought us WordPerfect and we could type out our papers and click print. And whew, because before that we had the old word processors, y'all remember those? And the manual typewriters, you know, it was manual typewriter, then the word processor. And we thought the word processor was awesome because you could type a line and hit enter, it was, and that little wheel would just, it would just do the whole paper for you. We had the old word processor that actually had a separate monitor with the black screen with a little flashing green square. I don't know if any of this even makes sense, but we had a good time with it. Anyway, and we would print things out, but now we had this computer, and the thing with the computer is you could change and make fix your mistakes before you hit print. Man, that was amazing. You could just, oh, there's a misspelled word. You know, instead of like white out, take it back in the typewriter, make sure it's exactly on the same line over and hit the button and it, bam, where that correction tape. Y'all know what I'm talking about, the old style. I love it. Anyway, so we had this computer, and then we saw this thing on it called Netscape. Like, what is that? Click, and nothing happened because we didn't have internet. And then one day we got internet, and we realized, wow, look at this. You know, the modem. You know, drinking my coffee, making another pot. And then, boom, there's the internet. Wow, what is this? I don't know. It's just the internet. This is awesome. What do we do with it? Me and brothers just sat there and stared at the screen. We're on Netscape. We don't know what we're doing. We're just looking at this screen. This is so neat. Well, it was 1.0. If we wanted to find out any information, people had uploaded that information onto the internet, and you can access that information. You cannot interact with it. You can only read it. You could only see what people had written. You could only see what was going on there. Minimal interaction. By 1996, had about 45 million global users. 45 million global users. Here's an example. Rather than, for example, going to a book or whatever, you go to a personal web page or Britannica Online or things like that, that's Web 1.0, right? A published content page. I remember going to Britannica Online as a kid. Instead of going to the encyclopedia, because you remember Britannica? Yeah. We had to use that when I was a kid to research in the library. Those massive books with the tiny, tiny print and multiple columns, and it was just awful. Well, now we could access all that on a screen. It was the same thing as the book. I don't know why we thought it was such a big deal. But that's social media 1.0. But now there's 2.0. It is a read-write web. Now there's billions of users. And I don't know, you know, it didn't really happen like, boom, hey, we came up with web 2. It just happened gradually. And then we woke up one day and we're like, oh, wow, look at all the stuff we can do. It just kind of happened. The goal was to build apps that network and improve as more users join. Now, in order to improve while people are joining, you have to have feedback, interaction. So that was, we're going to build these apps, we're going to build these computer programs, and then we're going to network and improve as more people join. And here's the key, it's people-centered instead of content-centered. Now, that's a big shift. People-centered over content-centered. So now the focus is on you. Focuses on you, not on information, not on facts. Now it's on what you think and how you feel about something. For example, instead of going to the web page in 1.0 or Britannica Online or a published content page that was made by a professional, maybe it's a PhD professor or something that was super knowledgeable in a certain field and he had published a page about, some kind of geological rock in the ocean or something, and you're doing a paper on it, and you go find his page, you read his content, and you write your paper. That's 1.0. Now we go to blogs and wiki pages and collaborative projects so that you all can work together or find out what everybody else is thinking about this. What's the problem with that? How do you know what the blog and the wiki and the collaborative project, how do you know the level of professionalism or education of the person that's writing it? It could be some random stranger sitting in an internet cafe making stuff up. Oh man, so-and-so said, and this has got to be true. Because people are just adding, blogging, what my opinion is, what your opinion is, and it's opened up all this stuff where What do I think about it? Instead of what is the truth? And that's the danger in some of this. It fits in with this culture of defining your own truth. That's why it was so accepted. It fit right in with postmodernism. Postmodernism is about the same time. Postmodernism's philosophy that says you just decide what truth is good for you. You build your own case. And so people were just going online, blogging and all this stuff, what they thought was true, what they think is fact. And I'm sure that there are things that are fact and good. But you don't have the verification of that. And so everyone has a voice. Don't you like that? You hear about that today. Everybody needs to have a voice. So it rose philosophically from the desire for connectivity and liberation. Now they talk, I've read articles about this and research articles that have studied the history of social media. That, you know, back in the, you know, Web 1.0 time where people are telling you, here's the information, that dampers your voice. You have to have a voice and you've got to be empowered. Don't you hear about that today? Right? Empowered. We got to empower people by giving them a voice. We need to empower people by going to God's Word is what we need to do. And that's the only voice they need. But we got to have millions and millions of voices, and everybody's got to be empowered, and everybody's got to have equal, egalitarian sharing of the same voices. How dare you, you know, you bigot, you're against somebody. But they don't want to hear about your voice. They don't want to hear about the voice of God's Word. But they want to hear about everything else. And how dare you minimalize that? Well, that's our culture. So this fits right in with it. We can liberate people so they have a platform to be empowered and share their opinions. And talk about why they're so important. And this is really where we started getting into social media at this time. So connectivity. Users could construct their own space and not be controlled. You know, we don't want to be controlled by some authoritarian type thing. We want to have our own voice and our own opinion so I can make my own Facebook page. I can make my own website. I can make my own blog. I can make my own Instagram. And I can share my voice. And everybody needs to know about me. And it has made a culture of self-centeredism like never before. Look what I had for Thanksgiving. I mean, I use social media. I really do. And I enjoy it. But I really don't really post that much stuff. I like to share funny things. I don't go, look what we did. I'm not into that very much. Now, I like posting pictures of my kids sometimes or family of what we're doing because everybody that we know lives 800 miles away. And my parents and stuff like to see what my mom actually has an iPad that my brother bought her. And after 3 years of teaching her how to use it, she can actually go on Facebook and check pictures out of her grandkids. And that's wonderful, isn't it? That's a great thing. You know, I'm sure Mr. Woods is probably going to go on there and he can see what's going on all the way over in Denver. They can see what's going on in Milton. So it's all round and round. And so it's good to do those things. But our culture has taken it to an extreme of, I'm going to post what I did, and if I don't get a certain number of likes, I'm going to go into depression. And it's humorous. But there's kids committing suicide over it. And that's sad. We're going to look at some statistics on that here as we go on in this study. Anyway, I don't want to get off track. There's currently even a 3.0, and this is just new in the past couple of years. It's a web of semantics. They have this huge of these algorithms built and all this where word meaning and relationships on the web and how people respond to the word that you used and the relationship that came from that. And it's constantly analyzing all that you do on social media and on the internet to continue to improve and integrate for one goal so that collaboration is at its peak. And we can all work together. Now, do y'all see anything in that, where we're headed? We're all going to be able to get news instantaneously, and we're all going to work together instantaneously. Just think about that. And then there's even a 4.0, and this is where it gets a little scary. This is the AI, the artificial intelligence, where we start mixing in computers and machines into human interaction. You know, I mean, we watched these sci-fi type movies years ago about, you know, robots and all this stuff. I'm telling you, yeah. I read somebody that wrote something back in the 50s about, you know, one day people are going to be able to have talk on the phone right, you know, from their pocket, and everybody's going to carry maybe even in these little devices. It was like 50 years ago they suggested that, and we have it. That's what we have today. I mean, I you don't know, but they have the ability with these machines to do a lot of stuff. Artificial intelligence is a booming field right now in the sciences, and that's where Web 4.0 is coming in. people interacting with machines. People interacting with machines. And all of it is taking us away, even just regular social media, and if we get into the 4.0, even to a greater extent, taking us away from human interaction. It's taking us away from it. And we're interacting in our own little world, in our own little screen, with people that we've never met before. That who knows if they're lying to you or not. Oh, you look beautiful in that picture. And they turn around and laugh at you with their, you know, on another platform or something. And the kids just melt down because of this. Anyway, we got to move on. What about social media? Let me see. It's defined as this. All right, here's social media. Here's the definition. A group of internet-based applications. Now, what do I mean by applications? That's like apps, right? All these apps. And, you know, it really started and changed back with when Windows 8 came out. They stopped using as many programs for the, I remember the day we had when Dad bought WordPerfect, it came in this box like this, you know? It had a bunch of disks in it. Stick the disk, and we even had those A drive disks, you know. And you download the program onto the hard drive. Now it's all app-based, totally app-based. You can download Microsoft Office from the cloud or from the servers, and it does a cloud-based thing where it puts an app on your computer. Everything is saved in the server somewhere. You don't ever have to, that's why they've made computers smaller and easier. They don't have big hard drives on them. You don't need as much storage space. I mean, on and on it goes. There's apps. So there's a group of internet-based applications that build on the ideological. It's interesting that they put that in. What's the ideology? What's the philosophy behind social media? Is that you have a voice. Everybody needs a voice. And you're just as important as everybody else. That's the philosophy behind social media. That you get a voice and that you're important just like everybody else. So get your opinion out there because you matter. Sounds like I'm talking to a salesman, doesn't it, Mr. Whitney? They call him, "Oh, Mr. Whitney, I wanted to reach out to you and let you know that you matter." And he's like, yeah. Anyway, they want to sell you something, so you matter. And you hear all these phrases and these hashtags and things like that. It's the ideology behind social media is people-centered. You are number one. Sounds like humanism, doesn't it? Where God, the God of humanism, is man. And so we just promote man and exalt your opinion. And you couple that with existentialism and postmodernism, where that not just there's man in general, but each individual man is his own God. And you create your own truth and you do your own philosophy. That's where it gets dangerous. This is the kind of philosophy behind it. So it's ideological and technological foundations of Web 2.0 that allow the creation and exchange of UGC, user-generated content. Instead of some professional or some qualified person in Web 1.0 posting content that you know is valid, now it's user-generated. It's a two-way street. Yes, people can post things, but then you can go on and make your little comments. Well, I tell you what, I get so much fun out of reading people's comments. And I tell you one thing I've never done. I never comment. People go into these Facebook comment wars. I'm telling you, you are not going to convince some moron that hates God sitting on the other side of a Facebook post. You're not going to convince him. Answer not a fool according to his folly. I don't even answer to these people. It's not worth it. Because now if I had a face-to-face talk with them and I could share God's word with them, that you may make some progress. These people are steeped in what they believe in. I mean, you get in there and they're just all liberal everything. You're not going to win. You're not going to win. And I just don't get into these little petty blog posts and arguments on Facebook and blah, 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 and then people shredding each other, saying stuff on a post that you would never say to somebody in person. That's a problem. And it's everywhere. And it can get dangerous. Even colleges have discussion pages and things, and I follow some of them and I laugh sometimes. People go on there and say the most petty, ridiculous things, complain. They use them as platforms to complain. I can say whatever I want because I have a voice and I'm important. No, you're not. You're a student. You agreed to come under the rules. There's authority. Be quiet and shut up. It goes to the point where there's no authority. You're your own authority in this magic world of that you've created, this mythical world out there that's ethereal in the air. And you're your own authority and you make your own content and it's true because you said it was. Well, we're in trouble, aren't we? So, and then there's the source I got that from. That was back in 2010 when social media first came out. So you have a voice. You're just as important as everyone else, and get your opinion out there. Let's continue on. There are four types of social media. I'm just going to quickly put these out. There's SNS, social networking sites. Social networking. Now, what does it mean to network socially? You find friends, you build relationships, you follow people, they follow you, you put out what you're doing, they put out what they're doing, you comment on it, you like it, you double tap that, blah, 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 whatever. Facebook, Twitter, right? LinkedIn for group. LinkedIn is for professionals that are trying to share across a professional, like the same job or something. Instagram, Snapchat, that's probably the most popular app among teenagers and young adolescents today, Snapchat. Maybe some of you never heard of it. I don't know. We're going to talk about it when we get there. UGC, user-generated content, YouTube. I'm telling you right now, I like YouTube. I mean, I know there's bad things on it, but I'm going to tell you, we have a junky refrigerator that is a poor design. Don't ever buy Samsung fridges. Has a poor design where they didn't make the drain hole big enough, so it water all backs up and freezes, and then it floods your floor when it melts. Love it. So Seth had to vacuum the fridge out over Thanksgiving. He hates doing that, but we have to do it every couple weeks. It's part of life. He can also go buy me a new fridge if he wants, so no big deal. But I go on YouTube, and there's literally everything you can think about the problems with that fridge and how to fix it, which this particular case is non-fixable. It's an engineering flaw. Ryan, help these engineers. I'm telling you. What is the problem? Let them know. Thank you. So, there, you know, you can go on YouTube, fixing a car. I can type in, instrument panel lights on 96 Ranger don't work. Enter. Somebody somewhere in some redneck remote something. Hey man, look right here. I'm going to show you how to get there. I'm Bubba on YouTube, and I'm going to show you right now. We will get it done with a little switch right here. You're going to take the dash out like this. I'm going to do step by step how to do it all. And you can figure it out and you can do it. I like that. I like watching those videos that teach me so I can go out there and do it myself, not have to pay some mechanic $2,000 to fix it. I like that. Good stuff. But that's user-generated content. Etsy. My wife loves Etsy. There's all kinds of things on Etsy that you can buy that are crafty. I bought our door plates for Pastor and I's doors in the office on Etsy. Handmade. Wooden with the nameplate. Really nice. You can find neat things, but it's user-generated content. They're trying to sell things as well. Wikipedia. Wikipedia is always right, right? Mrs. Brainerd and Mrs. Centered in high school, they have that rule. You do not use Wikipedia as a source, ever. Because it's a two-way street. People are just going on there, well, I think that this is the fact. You don't know if that's right or wrong. Because people are just adding and editing those pages whenever they want. Pinterest. Right, ladies? Love Pinterest. I tried one time, but I gave up. I couldn't figure it out. My wife loves Pinterest. Anytime I need a bulletin board idea, I'll look Pinterest for you good because I'm not going to. I can't figure that thing out for a million years. But I mean, it's awesome. Teacher bulletin boards. Pages and pages of ideas. Good stuff. I remember the old days when I started teaching, I was over there banging my head against a brick wall because I'm the most uncreative person in the world when it comes to bulletin boards. And I'm like, I've got a word up there. There we go. God, or just, we don't clown around. As an old teacher years ago put a clown on the page that we don't clown around in math. Next quarter, time to change it. You took math down and put up science. Next quarter, took down science, put up reading. I love that. That's my kind of bulletin board right there. We don't clown around in anything, just leave the same thing up. But now there's hundreds of ideas. You can just have the click. Or the girls loved this when I used to give a wedding project in life management. They had to plan a wedding. Oh, they loved it. They loved it so much. The guys just had to plan a vacation for a honeymoon. They had it easy. But the girls were on Pinterest. Let's look at this table setting and look at this burlap this and this candle with this. And they're just all these huge, they're just awesome taking pictures. And we're going to go out and do this. And they can do it themselves instead of paying somebody hundreds of dollars to do it. So it's good. Rob, are you in Pinterest right now with Rachel? Or are you just, yeah. Great answer, sir. So anyway, you know, there's wonderful things you can do there. So here's UGC, user-generated content. A professional maybe has made this beautiful table setting and posted onto Pinterest for other people to see. Good stuff. TMS is trending in marketing. Amazon, eBay, Craigslist, Groupon. PGS, play and game sites. Boy, gaming is like taking over. Everybody's gaming on their own phone. Gaming interaction with between people right there online, you know, or your PlayStation or whatever. Things like Sims and Farmville.
I remember when Farmville was a huge hit on Facebook way back, like 15 years ago. And I was like, what is this thing? People building farms and adding pigs and okay, whatever. Word feud, words with friends, right? Angry Birds, remember that one? You know, Minecraft. Minecraft is a fun where you build worlds and things. I think, Seth, you built something, didn't you, one time, way back? You build a lot of things. You can, like, build your house. You can build the campus and do it all in an internet world. It's like Legos, but on the computer kind of thing. I don't know much about it. I know it's kind of fun for some kids. Roblox and Fortnite, these are all games where you're interacting with people. You're interacting with people. That's where you got to be careful. And when you research these things online, the number one, especially those PNG sites, the number one concern that the world and society has is predators. And it is a concern because there's these people on there that are, you know, a 40-year-old pervert, and he's pretending to be an 8-year-old. And your kid just is drawn into that conversation and things like that. And the next thing you know, they're wanting to go meet so-and-so at the mall or whatever. And it happens. I watched a police task force. Now, they did that. They pretended to be the kid. They pretended to be the kid, and this pedophile was pretending to want to get to meet them and stuff, and they met him in Walmart and confronted him and arrested him. I thought that was kind of neat. So they do that too. There's a lot of predators out there. So it's not very safe, but at the same time, I remember, again, when I was a kid, we had the Atari, Frogger, Pac-Man, Barnstormer. I loved that one. The Red Baron had to fly between the barns. You know, yeah. The plug and play, Madden Ryan, or yes. Remember those things, or the Super Nintendo. There was no internet related to it whatsoever. Today, it's all online. So your kids can talk to, if they want to, anybody in the world. And I'll tell you, some of these games where the rooms are, where they're playing this massive, I don't know what they call them, big rooms like on Call of Duty or whatever, and everybody's playing from all over the world on Modern Warfare, and people are just saying whatever they want. This nice, clean language all the time. You know what I'm saying. And you got to be careful with those things. It's an all interaction. It's all interactive. And the thing is, you don't even know who the person is on the other end. But they can get into conversations that aren't good and aren't healthy. You got to be careful of those things. But it is fun, too. I'm not against it. My sons play online with their friends from school. And they have a good time. They can talk to their friends while they're playing the game, and they can work together. It's kind of neat to do. But it can be used in a negative way as well. So you got to be careful with that. We've got to stop here. I'm going to do this last slide, and then we're going to stop. The popularity of 2.0 obviously came with the smartphone, right? Evans defines this as a web-based or personal device-based application that connect users with online resources or each other. And the iPhone came in 2007, about the same time all this was happening. Now, way back in 2003, there was 3G service that began in the UK. Then it spread worldwide. 3G. BlackBerry. Anybody had a BlackBerry besides me? Yes. I liked it. I thought it was kind of cool. I liked the people had all kinds of names for them. Crackberries, Blackberries, all kinds of stuff. So now, you know, it's beyond texting and calling, but it's sharing applications as well. And 3G was pretty slow. Then 4G came out. It's what we have today in 2012. Higher download speeds. Then the smartphones kept improving. Now it's basically a standard for everybody. You know, I can take my phone, for example, and you know, if I fall down and I'm hurt or something and I can't get up or get to it, all I have to do is say, "Hey Siri, call Megan." Automatically will call. Done. And it's great technology that you can use. Or they have these Alexa home things and all this and Google Hubs and whatever. You just say, "Hey Alexa, call whatever." Or, "Hey Alexa, turn the lights off." You can get it all integrated in your house. It's crazy stuff. So it's all improved. And now it's the standard for everybody. And actually this past May, they came out with 5G. And they say 5G is going to make 4G look like some caveman. It's going to be super, super quick. I mean, just incredible speeds. And they came out with that in select markets in May, and by the next 2 or 3 years, it's going to be worldwide, I believe. And I think you were telling me there's somebody in Denver that's working on that kind of stuff, isn't there? The 5G technologies and chips and all that stuff. I mean, it's going to be the next newest, fastest. And of course, then you have to go out and buy a new cell phone, right? Got to get a new 5G capable cell phone. So that's just to keep marketing to buy more stuff.
But the iPhone was introduced in 2007, and now everybody has it. And we're going to look at, you know, when we come back next week, some statistics with young people especially. We're going to look at stats of how quickly this has arisen, and then we're going to look at also statistics with adults. I don't want you to think it's just young kids, but it's a surprising amount of adults that are also using social media. Nothing wrong with that at all. I don't want you to think I'm up here bashing social media. I'm against unsupervised social media, if that makes sense. I'm against using it for the wrong purposes, which we can do with everything. We can do that with everything. If it's in our heart to do wrong, we can find a way. But I just think it's us to be aware of what's going on today in our culture, why these things are becoming very popular, how it is all evolving really and growing, so that we are aware when our own kids are confronted with it, when we're confronted with it. And again, we're going to look at some of these apps. We're going to look at them in detail that we need to be aware of and careful with. You know, for example, I've talked about it before, like Snapchat. Why is Snapchat so popular with teenagers? You want to know why? Because after you type it and send it and they read it, it disappears. Now, it's on a server somewhere. And if a judge puts an order out, he can get it. And the kids don't think through that sometimes. But anything you want, pictures, dirty talk, whatever, you can send anything. And mom and dad then get your phone and open up your Snapchat and there's nothing there. And they have no idea. They have no idea what you've been into. This is my opinion. I think that if you're going to have Snapchat, and I use it sometimes. I can text Megan real quick. It doesn't take up space on my phone. I like it. Just send her a message and boom, or share a picture with her that I don't want to save on my phone because I don't have much storage. No problem. But I'm telling you, you got to be an older and mature person. I am against teenagers having Snapchat. Sorry, that might offend people. I'm against it. Until you graduate and are mature enough to know how to handle that kind of stuff, because the temptation of there's no accountability. That's the problem with it. There's no accountability. And you can disagree with me, that's fine. You have to answer for how you do things, but I don't think teenagers should have it. It's just my opinion. And Instagram, at least it's there. I mean, you can delete the chats, but most parents, when they look at their kids' Instagram, have no idea what to look at. They don't know what to look at. And they don't know the hidden things behind it and all that. And we've got to be careful with those things. That's the reason why we want to go through this, is to show you not just the good things that are in social media and the technology we have today. There's also a lot of bad things that we've got to be aware of and we've got to avoid, and we've got to help train. We've got to help train our young people how to use them the right way. And by the way, phones are no longer used for phones. I mean, I'm the old guy that actually takes my iPhone and calls somebody on the phone. Kids do not do that today. They don't even need cell phone service. Do you understand that? They don't want it. All they need is Wi-Fi and data. That's it. They don't want texting plans and they don't want calling plans, because you can do all of that through any of the apps that they have. All straight through Wi-Fi. They can video chat, they can call, they can text, they can do it all. They don't need a cell phone plan. When I go out of the country, I don't do an international plan. I just turn on Wi-Fi and I can text Megan and Seth and anybody, call anybody I want over here as long as I got Wi-Fi. Don't even need a plan. It's changing quickly from the days of, you know, the rotary phone that Brenda put in the office and kids didn't know what it was. Changing quickly from that to these other things. But anyway, I digress. We'll be back at this next week. Father, just thank you for the privilege we have to study these things. And I pray that it will be beneficial to us to see what kind of things are going on in our culture today, so that we can be aware, we can be warned, and we can see the dangers, but also we can see the good. And we can use them to glorify you and use technology in a right way to honor you. Pray these things now in Christ's name. Amen.